Support for KMUW's Into Music podcast comes from McClelland, reminding listeners that Frank Sinatra coined the word skibbity in Strangers in the Night, which you can listen to in their downtown Wichita showroom. More info on McClelland's innovative sound, lighting, and video technology can be found at maxsound.com.
Hi, I'm Jed Bodwin, and you're listening to Into Music from the KMUW studios, part of the NPR Podcast Network. My guest on this episode is Josh Bloom. Bloom is a longtime publicist and now the author of The Apples in Stereo, the first ever biography of that band. Featuring material culled from interviews with Robert Schneider and contributions from other key members, Bloom's approach results in a work that is anything but a typical rock biography. He recently spoke about the inspiration for the book, as well as his longtime ties to the Apples in Stereo. That and much more with Josh Bloom on Into Music, coming up now. What was the genesis of this book?
In being a PR person and having done most of what I wanted to do in the PR world and ended up managing a band with one of my mentors, Danny Goldberg, and having Fanatic grow to this larger company for a while on both coasts with a dozen and a half employees, I felt like kind of accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. And then as I was sort of transitioning into a smaller professional life and taking on more artistic work personally, this opportunity came about because the publisher J Card approached me, Jeff Gomez at J Card approached me about doing PR for his book series, for the next release in his book series. And I told him, hey, I'm kind of transitioning out of doing PR on a daily basis at the moment, but if you're interested, I'll send you a proposal. Thinking he would say, oh, that's okay, or I've already got everyone I need, or whatever. Part of me felt like, I hope he says no, and then part of me felt like if he says yes, I hope he says no after I send the proposal, because I would end up having to write a book, which I did not know how to do.
So if you were saying, hey, I'm going to send you a proposal, was this one of those things that was kind of bubbling up like, man, someday I really want to write about the Apples in Stereo at length? No.
Not at all. I have been friends with Robert Schneider for a very long time. And I mentioned in the book that he and I hadn't spoken for quite a while. We kind of had a falling out, as friends for decades will do, but we had gotten back in touch. And for a couple of years leading up to this, we were in regular touch again. You know, we kind of fought our, you know, we reconciled, we talked about, you know, what had happened. And again, as friends do, who recognize that they would like to, you know, honor the friendship, that the friendship was good and that there were skirmishes that needed to just be resolved. So he was on my mind and the band's history was on my mind. So when this opportunity came, this, you know, to submit a proposal there, I didn't think of anyone else. I thought sort of not jokingly, but sort of, oh yeah, sure, why don't I write a book about the Apples? I know, you know, and that's how that came about. There was never any idea to write about them until this idea came to mind, until this this opportunity came to mind, and then I started thinking about it at length.
Now that is one of the things that makes this story a little bit different, because this is not like a journalist who's written the occasional article for their hometown newspaper on, you know, I don't know, John Prine or something, and then says, okay, I really want to do a book. Now I got to do research. I got to fill in all this other stuff. This is, you had a relationship with the band and you're approaching it not just from the sense of like, I want to find the story, but you also knew a lot of the story going into it.
Yeah. Someone else asked me like, well, who would you write about next? And I was like, that would be a challenge. It would have to be a situation where someone was willing to let me get in and be willing to answer the questions I want to ask, because that was what was unique about this particular situation with this particular band, in that I knew all of them, but I know Robert really well. And I know Hillary really well, the two, main players, I guess you could say. And it allowed me to ask questions and say things that maybe someone else wouldn't ask or say, because they know how I am and I know how I am. So I knew that if I was going to be able to write it, then I would have to ask what I felt like asking, and they would either have to know that they weren't answering me or just go ahead and answer. And gratefully, they were very, very open. And I think that's what made the book fun to write, because they didn't, no one in the band, John and Eric included, no one backed down from what I wanted to get out of them.
Those relationships are so important because, as you know, sometimes there's, what I refer to as the vault. There's like, if you ask, why did that guy leave? And it's like, oh, he wanted to spend more time with his family. But if you are there and you know the complications and the dynamics, maybe you don't lead with that always, but you know that at some point you can get there and you can get to the real issues underlying the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, that's what's interesting to me. If anyone I was writing about or interviewing or whatever said, I wanted to leave to spend more time with my family, well, I'm not necessarily going to call them out on that's bullshit or anything, but to me, that's, yeah, sure, that's the surface version of I want to know what led up to that decision, or how you dealt with that decision, or when you broke that news, or when you broke that news to yourself. Those are the things I want to know, just as a person, and that I would ask regardless of whether it was going in a book or not. And if it's going to go in the book, then all the more interesting for the reader, I guess.
So you hadn't had experience writing a book, and at some point you probably, I would assume it was a conscious decision of, hey, I'm going to be part of the narrative. How quickly did that happen?
I hadn't had experience writing a book. Again, this is like fortuitous that this opportunity came, because I had been throughout my life, I've written long pieces, including writing, every bio for every band I've ever worked with. It was part of like how I worked. If you didn't let me write the bio, then I kind of the answer was no, because I wanted to tell the story the way I wanted to tell it if I was going to spend 3 months talking about you and your art. And so, in this particular case, I had some experience writing longer pieces, so I knew I could come into this and probably accomplish it. But like to your point, the only way I was going to be able to accomplish it, I figured it out very, very, very early. I was like, Josh, if you try to sit down and write, the Apples were a band that formed in Denver, Colorado, and this will never get finished. You're gonna have to write really what's in your head the way that you write. So I'll tell you, Jed, as I was writing it, I asked myself, I was very nervous to turn in the manuscript because I just had a feeling like that my editor was going to call me and say, I really appreciate all the work you put into this, but this is not a book. This is like your diary entry or something like that, because it is very, very first person. And I do not know how to write any other way. It just doesn't come out of me unless I write it like that. And frankly, I think if I tried to do it any other way, it would have been boring as hell.
Well, I think too, I mean, for me, the Apples in Stereo, this is a little bit of a mysterious kind of band for me, right? There's mystique, and I think that approach enhances it because you're not going into, okay, well, here was this traumatic experience Robert had in third grade, and that inspired, this album or something like that.
Yeah.
There's still that thing of like, we don't really know everything, and we don't need to know everything.
Yeah, I mean, people are mysterious, we don't know what goes on in people's minds and so on. So in a way, you're getting, an idea through this book of like what's going on in my mind about these people. And I'm evaluating their behavior and what they say in that context. Because I mean, yeah, people are just mysterious by nature. So, I didn't think I needed to like dig for whatever traumatic episode or whatever. I for me, it's more about like, here's what I saw. Please address this. And you know, I think, like I said before, like I would do that with anybody. If I was just sitting on a couch having a conversation or at a coffee shop with a conversation with a friend, you know, I would have that same conversation because I'm just innately curious about people. And in this, just in this particular case, I had the opportunity to move that curiosity into a book.
Well, that's how often, especially with people who do biographies, sometimes one of my questions is, how did you find the voice? Because sometimes they're dealing with people who have, you know, for instance, passed on or who were, you know, a little bit guarded at first or something like that. And so this is like, you know, it's that old approach of write what you know. So it sounds like you very much, you're just like, this is just who I am. This is how it's going to be.
Yeah, I will say that fear was a very massive motivator because there were times while I was doing this where I was like, "You are in big trouble, dude. Like you're not gonna be able to finish this." Because I found myself, I had to really get into this mode of like, you know, when my fingers would freeze up because I was now thinking about, should I say this? Should I not say this? That was when I would put, you know, I trained myself to push through, and I hope it moves it. I hope I move myself into other projects the same way because I felt like you're holding yourself back from saying what you find interesting and what you find entertaining. So just keep entertaining yourself. Type on the screen what you find entertaining, and just leave it at that. If it doesn't entertain anyone else, hey, at least you got one.
Well, one thing you do too that right you would never do in a traditional biography, I suppose, is like you're like, yeah, there's a certain point where the discography just kind of falls off for me. And although other biographers might say, you know, oh, well, this is a lesser album or something like that, I don't think that they would put it in quite those terms. You have that advantage based on the approach that you took.
Yeah, so there's a through line, there's a narrative throughout the entire book of, you know, I'm at the time that Robert and I weren't speaking, I was actually working pretty closely with Hillary, and you know, I had expressed to her that the band's last two records, even though she's on the next to last record, she left the band before that record came out, and I felt I had a very negative attitude about those records and felt they were, you know, dishonored the band's legacy, even though I had not heard listened to them at all. I had just decided that. And so there's a narrative throughout the book of kind of like not shitting on those records, but making it very clear, like, you know, I don't know about those two records. They came out on Elijah Wood's record label, Vanity record label, you know, and just kind of like, you know, having this negative attitude about them while acknowledging throughout, I have not listened to them, you know, kind of taking myself down a peg throughout the entire book about I'm criticizing something that I have willfully ignored. And, you know, I'll leave it up to a reader to find out, you know, because I ultimately do listen to those records and I do talk about my thoughts about them, but not in the way that you're suggesting, you know, like someone else might do with like lesser material or anything like that, but just to simply like, hey, I have a chip on my shoulder about these, and I'm going to be also be the one who knocks that chip off, and here you are with me while I do it.
It is funny, right? It's the joke of the movie Almost Famous, you know, don't make friends with the band.
Yeah, right. I
Because
was already friends with the band.
this is the right, like I have friends records where it's like there are certain records I can't listen to because I'm like all I hear is like the booze or the infight, you know what I mean? And so it
Sure.
colors it and it's like, oh, I don't. You know.
It's interesting that you say that because, like, again, for me, whatever's going on, be it, you know, drinking drugs or whatever is going on, to me, like, again, like, as a fan, in all of this, I mean, that's why I started doing, you know, promotion or PR in the first place, is because and that's why the company ended up being called Fanatic, is because that was my approach. Throughout all of this, I'm, you know, motivated by the art, and then that immediately leads me to what's going on here. And while, like you said earlier, like, you know, it could be third grade trauma, but you know, third grade trauma is not what's going on when you get to the room every day to actually write and record the music. What's going on every day is what's going on every day. And that's what fascinates me, because that really is what ends up on the recordings that end up, if the thing's a hit, you know, there was a moment in time when, you know, there was a series of days where Nevermind was recorded. So what was going on, you know, hour to hour to hour to hour? I mean, I think the Beatles are the only band that's where it's really broken down to that level, where you know what was going on at 12:04 p.m. on January 8th or whatever. I find that kind of stuff fascinating. I really like to know, like, what was the vibe that ended up on this record that we all know.
I also love that you don't mind being a little, and I think you alluded to this earlier, is that sometimes you're, oh, I don't know, for lack of a better term, maybe almost like a fly in the ointment, right? Like you know,
sure.
You know, you don't mind, like,
on the wall, in the ointment,
you know, you don't mind making these statements that might be a little, like, hurtful or caustic or something to your friend, to your longtime friend.
Yeah, I mean, Robert is a really cool person when it comes to taking criticism, at least, you know, as far as I'm concerned. I mean, but he also, you know, he's person. So, you know, I point out there are points when he reacted, and I indicated that. But throughout, you know, one of the reasons that I found this process fun is because he really never tried to put up any roadblocks as far as what I was writing about. Or, I mean, there were times when he told me things were off the record, but he wanted to tell me in order to just kind of, like, allow what I was thinking to be informed by his experience. But, you know, it's not like I consulted with him throughout, but as I was writing, we were still talking. So it was kind of clear to him by my follow-ups and so on what I was writing about. And at no point did he say, like, oh, are you writing about that? Or maybe you shouldn't say that, or nothing ever like that. So, you know, it allowed me to just roll with it. And, you know, again, we're talking about people. So I think showing all sides of a person, showing the rounded nature of a person, that, to me, that can't ever be bad.
That's interesting, because I think there's some people who would say, okay, well, you come from this PR world, and isn't that about only showing people in their best lights?
Not, some people didn't like working with me. I mean, I'm very, one of the reasons I'm doing this now is because, you know, I had gotten frustrated with encouraging artists to promote themselves, to be cool with being how I saw them. You know, it's like, hey, I've been doing this for 30 years. So, like, my take has, you know, value. And, you know, here is what I see. So why not, like, put that out there? Because I can't possibly be the only one who would see this. And so many artists, while incredibly talented, I think would be, they found themselves less than okay with pushing themselves in a way that I felt would get that music noticed. So yeah, it is a PR person's job to put people in the best light, and I always have tried.
Okay. Well, all right. So, you know, you talked a little bit earlier about, you know, sometimes the fingers kind of freezing up or something like that. When you finally finish the manuscript, or let's say even just the first draft or something, you know, then did it feel right? Or did you still have kind of, like, nerves at the end of it? Like, oh my gosh, what's this going to be?
The nerves were in, like I said, I'm like, Josh, look, you're happy with this. You've read this back several times. You were laughing while you were reading it. You know, my goals with this book, Jed, were, one, I would like people who are fans of the band to go back and listen to this music in a new light. And two, I would like to entertain, or not only fans of the band, but also people who might be curious about them to hear the music for the first time and be drawn to it. But two, I just want to I would like to entertain people. I would like, if they read it, to be like, and not put it down and go like, wow, that was a waste of my time. I would like them to be like, hey, I don't even know this band, but that was like a fun thing to read for a couple of hours. So I knew I was entertained by myself. I was laughing while I was reading it. It was like I said before, when I turned it in, I had to reconcile with myself. When you get a call in a couple of days, after your editor reads this, he might say like, this is not a book, like this is, I don't know what this is. That I was fully prepared for that, because I felt like I had to be, because I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah, I think I think reading this and if I'm not talking about real specific things, that's one of the things that I hope people will jump off with is discovering what's in between the covers themselves. And that for me was one of the things, was like, this is not a band that I had more than a couple records by, and I didn't necessarily know all the relationships and so on and so forth. But by golly, I was like, I'm more interested now.
That is, I really, really appreciate that, because that's all I wanted to get out of this. I think because they are part of this unique situation of the Elephant Six Collective, they are considered, oh, they're the fun pop band, and that's great. But I knew that these songs have a depth to them and a complexity to them, and then Robert's production genius, which is, really what he's in a way most known for producing the Olivia Tremor Control records, and obviously from, producing the biggest record that came out of all of this, which is the Nutramilk Hotel album, In the Airplane Over the Sea. I mean, Robert's production, sound design, horn arrangements, his performances on that record, that's what he's most known for. And I felt like his songwriting in a way got lost in this. And I feel like Hillary as a performer got lost in all of this as well. Her style precedes Meg White. Her style precedes Meg White by half a decade. And, seeing Meg in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame for a style that is so similar, this incredibly just like simple driving serves the song, I'm going to literally destroy my drum set by how hard I hit it style. I just wanted to make sure people are also aware of, how fantastic I think Hillary is as a songwriter, performer, and as Robert says in the book, their first album, Fun Trick Noisemaker, which people still reference to this day, he says in the book, it was our vision, the two of them.
Has everyone read it?
Robert's read it. Hillary, I get the impression, I mean, Hillary's a gem and is, incredibly responsive to me and a friend, but I sense that she didn't even read the Elephant Six book, I don't believe. I don't quote me on that. I'm quoting myself. Oh, okay. From my memory, I don't believe she read that either. And I understand where that's coming from, because frankly, I'm not so sure I would want to. Why do I want to read a book about me from 30 years ago? I don't know if I would want that either. So I don't know if she's read it. She will have copies in a couple of days, I assume, but I'm not going to press her about it. Like, did you read it? Did you read it? Did you read it? Did you read it? Because I don't know. I almost feel like it's intrusive, which is ironic since I've been intruding the entire time. But now I feel like, forcing someone like, now tell me what you think of you. Is probably more than I would want to do. But Rob, I know Robert's read it, because I needed him to kind of let me know if there were, egregious factual errors that needed to be addressed. But good
Yeah.
question, because it actually made me nervous when you asked me that.
Well,
I'd like them to read it. I hope they read it.
but I think there's a point too where it's like you maybe you work on something with somebody for a period of time, whether it's 3 weeks or a year or something like that. But you also know that this is just, on some level, it's just work, and it may be something that they don't want any further part of. It's like, it's just part of the process, and you can't do anything about whether they like it or whether they read it or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, in the last, I go in, I at the end of the book, I kind of go into my sort of strategy for them getting back together and doing another tour or something, just like because I that's what I want. Yeah, I mean, it's not even a matter of like my concern that of whether they like it or don't like it or anything like that. It's more about I hope they got what I was getting at. Like that would be my only interest is that if John reads it, if John and Eric and Hillary read it, that they feel like oh wow, okay, Josh kind of like appreciates or gets what I was doing and what my role was here. That's what's mostly of interest to me if they do read it. I want to know, I would love to know if they feel like that they were acknowledged or honored in a way that came from the heart, which it did.
You've been listening to a conversation with author Josh Bloom. His new book, The Apples in Stereo, is out now via J-Card Press. Learn more about the book at jcardpress.com. You can also learn more about Bloom's company, Fanatic Promotion, at fanaticpromotion.com. You can learn more about this podcast and all programming on our station by visiting our website, kmuw.org. You can send us questions and comments at info@kmuw.org. And as always, we'd like to take the opportunity to remind you that our theme music is composed and performed by Torin Anderson. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.